You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk, show number 391. Today is Sunday, January 28th, and my name is Steve. I'm joined by both Hammy and Curtis. And guys, in tonight's show, we'll do some catch-up as we discuss the Braves and Baseball America's top 100 prospects, the Yelich trade, look back on the Kemp trade, and do some predictions around the Zips projections for 2018, that is. Because it wouldn't be very interesting to do 2008 ones at all. Really.
We should really recapture that season.
All right. But first, guys, Chipper Jones sailed into the Hall of Fame. So it is time to celebrate his amazing career. And we'll do that all right after this quick break. All right, guys. Chipper is a first ballot Hall of Famer, getting the highest percentage of votes in this year's class with 97.2% of the vote. So I thought we should celebrate Chipper's amazing career with some of our favorite stats from his 19-year career. Ham, why don't you start?
I have some stats and then just some facts or, I guess, trivia about him. The one that is interesting that I found out today is that since 1965, he's only the second number one draft pick after Ken Griffey Jr. to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. So it's sort of a curse to be a number one draft pick. And they're saying if A-Rod goes in, he would be one, and then Joe Mauer would be one too. But it's not as frequent as you would think.
And then Dansby.
And then Dansby, yes, of course. Paving the way. So his slash line as a switch hitter, so from the left-hand side, he was 303, 405, 541. From the right-hand side, he was 304, 391, 498. So hitting 300 from both sides. Only one other Hall of Famer, Frankie Frisch, who we all know and love, who retired in 1937, is on that list with at least 5,000 career plate appearances. So just – that's amazing.
The consistency from both sides of the plate is just insane. It's crazy.
Yeah, and to be – I mean, it's just how rare a talent he was. And then his – and just, you know, the other one is just his patience. So over the past 30 years, he's one of nine players to hit 300 homers, slug 500, but have more career walks than strikeouts. His career walk rate is 14.2, which is 12th all-time. And all of the love for him has been great. Sorry to cut you off, Steve, but you know, just a professor and how what Maddox was to pitching, Chipper is to hitting. He was just a one of a kind hitter, a once in a lifetime type of hitter, and I would almost even say he's underappreciated.
On the back to his more walks, career walks and strikeouts, he was all over MLB Network as all four guys were the day that the announcements were made. And one of the guys on the panel asked him, tell us one of the things you're most proud about. And he said it was that he finished his career with more walks and strikeouts.
Yeah.
You know, not the homers, not whatever, that it was the walks to strikeouts.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable.
Curtis, what do you got?
Well, that walk rate, and this is sort of it's all sort of pointing in one direction about how great he was, but his walk rate, which was 14.2, is the 12th all time in baseball. I mean, you think about 12th all time in the history of baseball, with guys that had more than 10,000 plate appearances. And, you know, he's only, there's only like five guys that posted a higher single season OPS after turning 36 than he did on that 2008, we just talked about that 2008 campaign.
Maybe we should do.
There, of course, Barry Bonds, Ted Williams, Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, and Ty Cobb were the only guys that had a higher OPS after turning 36. And so he is one of only 35 live ball era players to reach base at least 40% of the time in 5,000 or more plate appearances, which you just think about that. It's just, I mean, it's just extraordinary to...
Yeah, his career on base was 401. It's absurd.
And that the other one that I saw was the record of the Braves when he played versus when he didn't play. So they won 57.8% of the games he played. including 48 to 45 playoffs. When he didn't play, of course, when he was hurt and tore his knee up and whatnot, they won 53.2% of their games and went 1-3 in the playoffs, including that 2010 NLDS against the Giants, which if you parlay that over the course of 162 games, that win percentage gap means the difference between 94 games and 86 games every season for 18 years. It's 144 wins that they lost out on over the course of his season, over the course of his 18-year career with the Braves because of his injuries. So, and that's the difference between winning a division and not winning a division, you know, making the playoffs back when fewer teams made the playoffs and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just the impact that he had on the team. And I mean, it's funny to think about that there were people, and I mean, of course, they were Phillies fans and whatever else, but that they not only did not think he would make it on the first try, that perhaps he was not even worthy to be in the Hall of Fame, you know? And it's just, it's lunacy when you see where he compares to all-time greats in the history of Major League Baseball.
I mean, I thought the same thing too, but then the votes bore it out. He was generally acclaimed as, you know, one of the best.
Well, it's just that he played for the Braves. Frankly, a lot of the time he was with the Braves was sort of when they were not as good as were.
With the baby Braves, he was the only veteran with the baby Braves. Well, there's other veterans, but yeah,
there was a lot of bad teams that he played on.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, Kurt, you spoke about his OPS after a certain age. His OPS just throughout his season, right? I mean, 19 seasons of the first one was very short. So let's call it 18. He had an OPS over 1 in 5 seasons and then an OPS over 900 in 6 others. I mean, and he finished with a career OPS of 930.
That's crazy.
It's just amazing. Along with his career 303 batting average and 401 on base percentage. You know, as I was just poring over his baseball reference page, another thing that stood out to me is I forgot that in the 90s, he stole a few bases, you know, like between 96 and 2000. Here are his stolen base totals, 14, 20, 16, 25, which was in 1999, which was his MVP year, and then 14. And then all single digits the rest of his career. But the second half of the 90s, he was, you know, swiping some bags too. And one other thing, and it's just one of my favorite memories of Chipper overall, and it backed strangely back to the year 2008, was that year when he was like, damn it, I'm going to try to hit 400. Do you remember that year where
He won the batting title.
Yeah, and he was just every game. Yeah. It was just I'm going to go up there and I can just poke the ball wherever I want. Like I've got a cue stick and I'm on a pool table and I can just put the ball wherever I want.
Yep.
It was just amazing. So he ended up at 364 that year with a 470 on-base percentage. His last day in the 400s was June 18th. He batted 410 in April, and he batted 417 in May that year. It was just incredible.
Well, and if he hadn't missed all that time, he surely would have gotten to 500 home runs. You know, he would have probably stolen a lot more bases. And then you're getting into the pantheon even higher up that, you know, you're considering him even amongst the
top 10
all-timers. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know where you would rank him with third baseman, but, you know, we talk about switch hitters and stuff like that. But as third baseman, too, I mean, he's got to be top 5 third baseman of all time in the history of baseball.
Kirkson, I guess, been top 3. So there's Mike Schmidt, him, and Eddie Matthews.
Brooks Robinson.
Yeah. I think there was another he had in there.
George Brett, maybe?
Probably. Wade Boggs.
Yeah. I take Chipper over Boggs. I think. I don't know. It's just still crazy that he lost out Rookie of the Year to Hideki Nomo.
I think they sort of changed that now. And it might be the Chipper Jones rule that guys that have played in.
Is that right? I thought Ohtani will be a rookie this year. Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
Well, he's, but I don't. That, but I thought he's the number one prospect.
But right? I thought they maybe they wouldn't. They couldn't be up for Rookie of the Year if they. I don't know. I thought I just read something.
I don't know.
And it may be that it doesn't mean they're the same thing, right? Whether you're winning the award and what you're considered.
Right. So, so folks, check out Grant McCauley had a really great piece on Chipper's career by the numbers, for a bunch more great Chipper stats. So the, you know, there's no shortage of great stuff out there. So big congratulations to him.
Yeah. What about Andrew? Has your mind changed on him? Do you think he's deserving of the Hall?
I do think he's deserving of the Hall. I think he's the best center fielder I ever saw play. Hmm. You know what I mean? And all the homers. I mean, I think that Andrew was a one-of-a-kind talent. He made it look too easy because he knew where the ball was going to be at, you know, at the crack of the bat, and he was just sitting there waiting for it. I mean, Andrew was just unbelievable.
What about all the strikeouts and the low batting average?
I think that defense is only more and more valued, and for that reason alone, he should be in.
Yeah.
You know, if StatCast was around during Andrew's heyday, he'd be getting so much more love now. I know that's not an original thought. I've seen it places.
Right.
But I absolutely believe that if there were defensive metrics and run saved metrics and StatCast back then, the love that Ender gets for his, you know, the difficulty of the plays.
He got the love. Andrew got the love, but I just don't know, like, in the voter's mind, will it be enough? I mean, I think he's worthy.
The answer is resolutely no.
Never.
Pam. I mean, there's no way with whatever 6% vote he got, he's never going to make it in unless it's by the veteran committee later.
Yeah.
And McGriff, he's another guy that his name will probably never grace the Hall, and
I think there's a much better chance McGriff gets in the Veterans Committee than Andrew.
Well, it's interesting, like just reading stuff and like the comparative numbers for Fred McGriff versus Jeff Bagwell, who obviously just went into the Hall of Fame, and nothing against Bagwell, but in virtually every metric, McGriff was a better baseball player than Jeff Bagwell, and Jeff Bagwell's in, and honestly was in and sort of had the cloud of steroids floating over him at several times in his career. And Fred McGriff, and it's perhaps because Fred McGriff moved from team to team or whatever it might be. He's a low key guy, but the fact that he is sort of neglected in this whole process too is sort of a shame.
Well, it is certainly a crime. It's a crime, dog. It is obviously a flawed process, and the guys who, you know, withhold votes because they don't want guys to be first ballot Hall of Famers, like, you know, is there 2.2% of you that's like, yeah, Chipper shouldn't have gotten in? I mean, it's just silly. Like, how does everyone not vote for him and make him unanimous? That can be said for a ton of players, of course. Greg Maddux, for God's sakes.
Yeah. I think some people, they know it's where it's flawed. I think some people, they just know that person's getting in, and there's a guy who's 12th on their list who they just, you know, feel very passionately about, and maybe it's their last year eligible or whatever, and they don't do it.
I think that's part of it, but I think that's a small part of it. I really do think it's some wielding of power.
It's stupid.
Yeah. All right, so guys, last week, Baseball America released its top 100 prospects in baseball, and the list is filthy with the Braves farm system. And really, it's just all good news, right? They lead the league with 8 names on the list, 6 pitchers of the 8. Just a quick side note. So the rest of the NL East, in terms of prospects on this list, the Phillies had 5. Not surprising, they're in the midst of their rebuild. The Nats and the Marlins are at 2, although that probably changed for the Marlins if they had written it after the Yelich trade. And then the Mets at 1.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. Not looking great for the Mets.
And he's at 94.
yeah, exactly. That's right. So, so 3 other teams came in next with 6 on the list.
Of course, the Brewers just gave away half of these guys to the Marlins, so maybe those 2 teams switch places.
Yeah, right. That's right. So 5 of the Braves' 8 are in the top 50, and of course, the number 1 overall prospect is Ronald Acuna. So here are the names and the spots for the Braves. So Acuna, number 1. Gohara, number 23, probably a lock for the rotation this year.
Yeah.
Soroka, 27, gonna be knocking on the door. Kyle Wright, number 34, still got a little time. Ian Anderson, still got some time. Austin Riley, the third baseman, probably in 2018, at 54. Ian Anderson was 42, if I didn't say that. Colby Allard at 65. And then Max Fried, who also is knocking on the door, at 72.
He opened the door.
But can he get back in?
Now
I mean, you know, there's no guarantee he's going to be on the 25-man. So of those eight players, two are already on the 40-man, which we mentioned, Gohar and Fried. And we will see five of those six in spring training as part of the non-roster invitees. So Acuna, Soroka, Kyle Wright, Austin Riley, Colby Allard, we will all get to see throughout spring training to see what they got. I mean, obviously Gohar and Max Fried too, but those five guys of the top 100.
Excited to see Riley most out of that list. You know, and not, cause we're not, you know, we have Camargo and Rio Ruiz, and I don't think Ruiz is really, we should stop considering him an option since he's nowhere on that list. Right. So I'm excited to see Riley.
Yeah. So for the record, we're recording this on Sunday. I was at the second day of Chop Fest and was at the Alex Anthopoulos Q&A, and, you know, someone asked about third base. And he said, you know, if we were starting spring training tomorrow, third base would be a competition between Camargo and Ruiz. Mm-hmm. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. His body language did not betray anything. Look on his face did not betray anything. But he made a couple of sort of parenthetical comments throughout the Q&A today regarding third base and particularly regarding Camargo about, like, so-and-so and so, if he's here, so-and-so and so, if we don't make a move. I did walk away from that Q&A today thinking that he really wants to make a move,
right,
and not start Camargo at third. So that, you know, for what that's worth, that's good.
Yeah.
So staying on prospects, guys, the Yelich rumors were heating up and the Braves were written about being involved. So lots of reports that the Marlins wanted all negotiations to include Acuna in the package, something the Braves were not going to do. And last week, Yelich ended up going to the Brewers for their number one, their number three, and their number six prospects. So think about that as, if the Braves did it, Acuna or even Albies, you know, and there's a bunch of guys you can throw in, Kristen Pash or Austin Riley or Soroka, right? I mean, there's a number of guys you could throw in there. So, Kurt, with a package starting with Acuna or Albies and then throw in a couple of the other highly touted prospects, would you have done that to get Yelich?
No, and I think it's just because where Acuna is right now. And even Chipper was saying it. This is our Mike Trout right now. You know, this is our
Aaron
guy
Judge.
The guy that they have full expectation will be the standard bearer for the team going forward. Potentially this season, starting maybe next season, but the sky is absolutely the limit. And not that Yelich is not a great player, but you know, you're talking about a franchise transformative talent in Acuna. There's for them to even suggest that he was the beginning and end of any conversation, it would have been a non-starter for me. I mean, that just, there's just no way that the Braves were ever getting rid of Acuna, and they were obviously not serious in their negotiating if they thought that the Braves would have made that deal. Now, if you're talking Albies and Ian Anderson and Austin Riley and AJ Minter, whoever, you know, package you throw together, maybe. But with Acuna, he's as untouchable as it can possibly be.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know,
non-starter. It's a non-starter.
Absolutely. And frankly, I wouldn't have done it for Albies either. Albies looks like a ton of potential. He's the second baseman right now. I wouldn't have even done him for Albies.
And we've got Christian Pache right there too. I mean, he's a couple of years off, so another outfield prospect that
maybe Dustin could be Peterson.
Pushing the door. Oh, Dustin Peterson. Ham, you've been pushing Dustin Peterson for like 2 years now.
I know, but he was on
He was before he got injured.
And he got injured. I mean, he's coming. He's a non-roster invitee. I'm excited to see what he can do this year. I just hope he gets a chance because, I don't know, I like him for some reason. Okay,
well,
Kurt.
Maybe he's a bench guy, you know?
Yeah. I feel bad for the Marlins, though.
For the fans.
For the fans, not for the team, but for the seven fans that must be left. What a dumpster fire the Marlins are. And this is coming from a team whose GM from last year is banned for life from baseball. So for me to
how
say
how about
that,
the Miami taxpayers?
I feel bad for all of them.
Got sold a bill of goods about fielding a competitive team and if they built stadium. That stadium. And I guess they did go out and spend money. And then when they, you know, didn't win 100% of their first 50 games, they were all traded away.
Yeah, it's going to be ugly there and will only help the Braves record this year, if nothing else. All right, guys, next up, let's take a quick check back on the December's Matt Kemp trade. But first, a quick break. All right, so guys, in December, Matt Kemp, as we all know, was traded to the Dodgers for Adrian Gonzalez, Brandon McCarthy, Scott Kazmir, and Charlie Culberson. So I just want a quick reminder, right? Kemp had a very legitimate first 2 months at the plate in 2017 where he slashed, I didn't remember it was this good, 345, 381, 608.
Yeah, he was a beast.
A beast.
He's carrying
the team. He really was. And then
best shape of his life.
He was.
Yeah, well, he did come in that way. That's right. And then he spent the rest of the season slashing 232, 277, and slugging 371. His drop-off was just remarkable. So what do we got, right? I mean, we've cleared Kemp, which is kind of amazing. We took on some salary for 2018, but cleared a bunch in this trade for 2019 and this historic free agent class that's coming. Brandon McCarthy could very well be part of the rotation. Frankly, if he does not just, you know, really disappoint in spring training, he's pretty well locked into the starting rotation, I would think.
Probably.
Yeah. Kazmir, a huge question mark, but could be something. And Culberson may be part of the bench. So really, it's just an amazing move for Anthopoulos. It's like it reminded me that day when, you know, like the Hawks got rid of Josh Smith. Like I just never believed that they'd have been able to do it. And Anthopoulos was able to do it.
Yeah.
Ham, anything other? Any more praise?
Mean, yeah. You know, it had to happen. Acuna's coming. We all thought this wouldn't happen, I think, that Markakis was going to be the easier piece to move just because of friendlier contract and what he brought to the table. And somehow Anthopoulos got rid of Kemp. And we have someone who can eat innings there, and maybe there's some upside to the pitching and all the things you said. So it's great. It's great. And it's just that albatross, it just makes it easier to bring Acuna in and just not have to worry about where we put him.
And you guys remember, I was very surprised about this. I don't know, maybe a week or two later after the trade, DOB wrote a blog talking about what a terrible influence in the clubhouse Kemp was.
Yeah.
And that he was really surly. And he didn't just, you know, intimate. He came right out and said that, you know, it was a big motivation for the front office to get him out before he had any more exposure to this very young team. And God, I think back to that very compelling letter that Kemp wrote in the Players Tribune when he was traded to the Braves, and how excited he was, and he wanted to undo the bad reputation he had in LA and all that stuff. Just crazy.
Yeah.
Not so much.
Yeah.
Well, I think as his stats went down, his mood went down.
And his weight went up.
Yes.
Well, it's a lot of, what if with some of these guys that came over? I mean, that McCarthy and Kazmir both obviously had lots of injury problems here lately. So high upside if either one of them can come back and pitch. God, I mean, Kazmir's only 33. It feels like he's 47.
I know.
But yeah, I mean, if they can come over and stay healthy and provide, I mean, McCarthy sort of in fits of going in and out of the lineup with injuries was 6-4 with the 3.98 ERA for the Dodgers last year. I mean,
0.7 WAR. He brought something
better
to the table.
Cologne or whoever else they brought over. Maybe we can have some Dicky Lightning in a bottle. That we got.
Can we
last
say that
year.
On the show? I don't know that we can say that.
I feel like I just did.
I think it's a new product line.
Yeah, that actually it's an energy drink I'm working on. But yeah, I mean, you know, who knows?
Worth I mean, to get anything out of the guys that came over would be just such.
Yeah, because it was just a cash dump. It was a cash swap.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, I'm so looking forward to Adrian Gonzalez in a Braves uniform.
Yeah. I think he can recapture his glory days.
Yeah.
He's a Met. Yeah. I mean, he's a Met, and the Mets are paying like $700,000 of his $13 million or $17 million.
And they will probably not even get $700,000 worth of.
It'll be interesting to see. I bet he's got a little something. He'll be rejuvenated a little bit.
For all those times Lucas Duda needs to sit out.
The Mets are going to be so bad.
Oh, my God. Marlins.
I mean, I think we could be second. Don't you think we're second in the East right now?
Yeah.
If we can beat the Phillies.
I think we can. I think we're projected.
Remember last year, our terrible record against the Phillies? Oh my God.
But I still think whether we win the season series with them, we will be better than them. We will finish better.
Well, and wait until Bryce Harper signs with the Yankees, and then the division's ours.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, guys, let's finish up with this. So Zips projections came out this past week, and I'm going to ask you guys to do some predictions
on what they
– my God, this is we need to put like a warning at the top.
Starting in a bottle, baby. 2018 with some Dicky Lightning in the bottle.
All right, so guys, do some predictions on what Zips came up with. So we'll start with some position players, the biggest sort of question marks. And let's start with Acuña. Yeah, and his slash line. So, Kurt, what do you think Zips has for Acuña this year?
278, 335, 650.
Ham?
That's pretty good. I was going to say 265. 340, 675.
Yeah, you guys are close on the first two, real high on the slugging. So that Zips has 269, 321, 452. But God, if he got on base at a 321 clip, that'd be a pretty nice start. All right, Hammy, Albies, what do you got?
295, 350, 450.
All right, Curtis?
Yeah, mine are right around the same. I'm actually going to go 305. I feel it. Maybe 360. Slugging, maybe not quite that high. Maybe 440.
Yeah, Zips does not see it that way, guys. They have Albies at 258.
What?
Wow.
316 on base and 408 slugging.
Wow. No love.
So you're saying we're really excited about Albies?
I think so, yes. And about Acuña's power in
his
first year.
Yes. Prolific power.
Well, that 700 slugging for Acuña.
That was for Gwinnett. For Gwinnett. The stripers.
All right. Curtis, Dansby Swanson, what does Zips have in that?
240, 310, 330.
Hammy?
270, 315, 390.
Yeah, Hammy, you were a little closer. So they had him at 254 batting average, 331 on base, 385 slugging. What if we get 254, 331, 385 out of Dansby this year? It's a bit of a disappointment.
It's a definite disappointment. Definite disappointment.
So saith the dog.
Yeah, yeah, my the dog can't there. Even the believe that. Like, she will not
Dad,
have that.
He's got to turn it around.
She will not have that.
All right. So, Curtis, let's go to you. Last position player, Johan Camargo, our opening day third baseman.
Well, he's been tearing up
the Winter League.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hit two walk-off homers. I'm going to go 260, 330, 370.
All right, Hammy.
I'm going to go 275, 320, 400.
Yeah, yeah. Guys are too high on Camargo, too, for Zip's taste. They've got Camargo at 248 batting average, 288 on base, and 374 slugging.
Zips knows nothing. They know Zip.
Hey.
But the title.
Yes. Now we know why they called the mascot Blooper.
They know that there ain't much power on this.
But to be fair,
lineup. Yeah.
Don't they bring in like a 4-year weighted average, and they always say that Zips is for the younger guys is much less accurate than
accurate. Yeah. But it'd be great if these numbers weren't right.
Yes.
Let's just say. All right, guys.
Not so fake news. They are.
Let's do ERAs for three of the potential starting pitchers or likely starting pitchers. So, Hammond, let's start with you and Gohar. What does Zips have for his ERA?
3.35.
Curtis?
No way. Yeah. 378.
Whoa, 376.
Nice.
Yeah, nice job. And they have him, his FIP, at 362, so a little better.
Do I get a shot in the dark win for that one?
Nope.
Yes, you do, Kurt.
You win January.
Yeah, exactly. In the month that we're not keeping score.
They call me.
Congratulations. All right, Curtis, what do you got? ERA for Fulte.
428.
Ham?
412.
Yeah, it's pretty grim as far as Zips is concerned. They have Fulte at a 476 ERA.
Ooh.
Yeah, a FIP of 456, but not very pretty numbers for Fulte.
Wow, they're really high on the Braves.
Yeah, yeah. Seriously.
I read, you know, Talking Chop did a good, because the Zips projection doesn't just say, and it's going to be this many wins for the team. But there was a good Talking Chop article about it and sort of crunching the a lot of the peripheral numbers that are part of the overall Zips projection. And they came out with Zips as basically thinking the Braves will win 80 games this year. So final starting pitcher, Hammy, Tehran.
Mm-hmm. 3.9.
All right, Curtis.
365.
435, says Zips. And actually, a worse FIP. They have him at a 453 FIP. So, I hope the starting pitching's a little better than this.
Yeah, how are we winning? How are we winning?
I know exactly.
All right, guys, let's close the show
it's all
on
Freddie.
This.
Freddie and Brendan McCarthy.
48 homers.
Yes.
So let's end on the most important topic of January. And Kurt, we'll start with you. Your thoughts on the new Braves mascot, Blooper.
I get that it's sort of marketing for the kids because everything has to be marketed to kids now. But I guess my biggest issue is it's just such a blatant Philly Fanatic ripoff.
Yeah, it is certainly in the family. I mean, you know, the funny thing is, like, I was talking when the Braves announced they were going to be unveiling a new mascot. I was talking to the kids saying, you know, it's going to be really bland. It's going to seem like it's just built in a baseball marketing, machine. Yeah. And lo and behold, I don't know if you guys saw that there was a Periscope broadcast of the unveiling, and literally there was like a mad scientist standing in front of the mascot 3000 or something, and it literally was a marketing machine spitting out Blooper, and there he is.
It reminds me of, remember the Olympic mascot Izzy?
Oh yeah, well yeah. It's not that bad, at least.
Well, time will tell.
Yeah, I know I use the word interminable way too much, but that reveal was
Oh my God, it was so long. No, I brought up the video for my kids, and like halfway through, they were like, "Oh, can you just tell us what it is?" Because I wouldn't tell them. Yeah, it was. But if you watched the, you know, the 3 to 8 year olds who were sitting on the lawn there, they were eating it up. They love it, which, you know, that's really, this is all about selling, you know, blooper t-shirts and blooper stuffed animals and all that stuff. And they probably achieved their goal. So
I'm sure.
But nothing about selling actual baseball.
Well, did we not mention Brandon McCarthy?
True.
All right, folks, that is the show. So look, we will be back every few weeks as we get closer to spring training and our weekly schedule starting in late March. You know, when regular season starts that last week of March.
Let's do a new third baseman signing show.
Oh, I can't wait. I cannot wait for that show.
Yes, yes.
All right, folks, remember, we are at our new home of Blog Talk Radio, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. As always, you can find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com to access our shows, to check out our blogs, and to post in our comment section. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and go Brave!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.